Welcome, welcome, Pastor Smith. We're so glad you've accepted the call to First Church.
Why, thank you. And I'm so glad to be here.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you'll just hold these, please.
Wow, that's heavy. What is all this yeah, stuff?
Well, these are our expectations for what you'll be doing 24/7 in terms of the ministry, evangelism, discipleship, teaching, counseling, yeah, visitation, sermon prep, board meetings, janitorial, and other duties.
No, wait! I can't do all this by myself. I've got a family.
Family? Family.
Yeah.
Family,
I just moved here.
Well, whatever that is, Pastor, you'll have to take care of that on your own time.
I'm not gonna have any.
Oh, no. Well, do you ever feel like all the duties and expectations of church are leaving you with no time for your family? If so, we hope to help on this edition of Pastor to Pastor. I'm Chris Fabry and our host, Reverend H.B. London, Jr.
You know, Chris, that is a common complaint that we hear from a lot of pastors, especially from their spouses and family members. The kids are wondering where their dad is, the spouses are wondering who it is they really married. And the problem, of course, is that it can be pretty hard sometimes to draw appropriate boundaries between the various jobs and roles of a pastor and the stuff he or she needs to take care of at home.
Yeah. I know the answer to this question, but do a lot of pastors feel like they're just on call every day, 24 hours a day?
You know, I think so, especially in a smaller church, where there's little or no staff. But you know, Chris, there's another phenomena that I see happening, and it's among the younger pastors. And a lot of the younger pastors, they just refuse to get caught in this web. But the question is, who else is going to do the work? That's what really we have to answer. Or certainly in those situations where a church is growing and the pastor feels tremendous pressure to oversee this and that and the other. And then some pastors, like myself, I hate to admit, we're just built that way. We're type A personalities with some kind of drive. I don't know if it's God-given or self-imposed, but to help serve people, to be available whenever they're needed, you know, to kind of be a super person when maybe that's not who you're meant to be. Unfortunately, as I've confessed many times before, and this seems to be confession time, pastors like me can also become workaholics to the point that the church becomes all-consuming. And as one pastor's wife said to me one time, the church has become my husband's mistress. Yeah. And that's not good. And even if we do carve out time to be with our families, so often we're really not there. And they keep saying, you're not listening. You didn't hear a thing I said. The kids want your attention, but you're somewhere else. And, you know, once we hear that 3 or 4 or 5 times, not only do we get the picture, we get frustrated because we don't know how to handle it.
Yeah. Well, on this edition of Pastor to Pastor, we really hope we can give you some practical and encouraging words for how to find that right balance between ministry and family life. Our first guests are authors and conference speakers, Dr. Greg Smalley and his wife, Erin. Greg is the son of well-known author Gary Smalley. Greg and Erin work together at the Center for Relationship Enrichment at John Brown University in Siloam Springs, Arkansas. In addition to writing and speaking, the Smalleys do intensive relationship coaching for both married and engaged couples.
You know, Greg and Erin, I think you've been married, I don't know, 16 or 17 years, whatever that might be. But I remember way back when I pastored in California that Gary Smalley and John Trent brought their dog and pony show to our church to our church in Pasadena, and the place was jammed with 3,000 people, and we had just a wonderful full weekend. And so that was about the time I got to know your dad, probably 20, 25 years ago. And then having been to Branson so many times and done the pastor's event with your dad at the chateau and at the palace and all those places, you know, and having listened to the stories of you all growing up and getting married and the trips you've taken, it's kind of like I'm a part of the family.
You are.
Just kind of looking in.
Yeah, absolutely. You've been a good friend to our family. And, you know, when my dad and John, when they did or at least when my dad came to do the dog and pony show, Which was I? Was I the dog or the pony? So I'm never quite sure. You were I'd rather be the dog.
But you were well represented with stories, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. I was the strong-willed child of our family, and so I actually inherited the spanking stick that my dad made us sadistically color.
And put holes and beat it up a little bit.
I know, but I got that, and so now my kids will inherit that as well.
Well, you know, and so because of your background, and Aaron, I can't blame you for all this. I can just blame Greg, basically. But, you know, because of your family background and, you know, the family that you've had and the influences you've had and all the schools you've gone to and the books you've written about this and that, I just would imagine that you have the perfect marriage and the perfect kids and the perfect relationship. And that's the reason why I've got you on Pastor to Pastor, because we need something perfect.
Yeah, that's exactly. So the word's out. That's great, because someone is really misspoke about us big time.
Yeah, they obviously aren't living next door to us.
Aaron, when you were going with Greg and you guys were getting ready to get married and everything, and you had that Smalley mystique around you, did that ever give you pause at all?
Do you know, the funny thing is that I really, honestly, wasn't really aware of who the Smalleys were. They, and that's hilarious, but I was raised in a different faith, and it really didn't, they weren't real predominant within that faith. And so when I got to know Greg and his sister Carrie, I was best friends with his sister in college, I just really got to know the family and fell in love with the family. And I really, honestly can say I really didn't know the full extent of what I was getting into, but God had already prepared me for that, and I didn't even know it.
See, in my life, I've got the Dobson mystique hanging over me, and people are always saying, what's it like to be Jim Dobson's cousin? And I always say to them, why don't you ask him what it's like to be my cousin?
Yeah,
that's right.
That we were actually just going to ask you that, so you know, you beat us to that punch. Yeah, yeah. The funny part is that I can't tell you how many times that people usually call me Gary. So, I mean, Greg, Gary, I mean, it's close. But usually I'm Gary. And then oftentimes they'll see Aaron and think that she's my dad's wife. And they'll be like, wow, now how different an age are you guys? And it's really quite creepy in many ways. But you know, we actually, you know, when I remember telling Aaron when we were getting married, I said, hey, this is going to be a piece of cake. I mean, I'm getting my doctorate in marriage and family, you know, grew up in this great marriage and family with the experts. And it took us, just a few weeks to realize that this is not going to be easy, to the point to where our first 2 years, we really struggled. I thought that we were one more argument away from Aaron leaving me. Man. I didn't think she divorced me. I just didn't think she wanted to be around me anymore, because it was hard for us.
We had a real hard time handling conflict. And looking back, we can say that those early years, although they were so challenging, it really led us to where we are today. We really had to grow up and learn how to communicate and learn how to work through those hard times. And everybody, I love to tell people that, yes, we, in fact, have very difficult times too, but we work through them differently than we used to. And it for them, I think often the light bulb goes on to say, wow, if you guys have hard times, then it's okay for us to have hard times too.
Well, you know, I know you've got three children. So when did the first child come along? How long had you been married before the first child came?
Well, the first child came along a little sooner than what we had expected. We had been married 1 year and 1 month when we got pregnant. On our second anniversary, we had a 1-month-old baby girl.
So definitely. We don't talk to people about birth control. So
and ironically, I'm a labor and delivery nurse. You would think I would have had that figured out. Yeah. But God obviously knew what was better for us, because really she was really influenced us to really take that step toward growing up and toward really working on our marriage and getting in sync and just becoming great teammates.
So in a sense, having the children was not only a positive thing for the world, so to speak, but I mean, it really did cause you to look more completely at your marriage and how to handle conflict and how to get along with each other as well.
Absolutely, because you can just sort of, well, not that you can just skate by, but when you bring a child into the relationship, I mean, they say the research is the moment you bring a child in, the average couple has 8 times as many arguments than before kids. And so, I mean, it brings in a reality. Either we're going to learn how to handle differences and work through problems, or we're going to be a statistic. And, you know, and Aaron and I, we love each other, and we hope that we can help people learn how to have great marriages. But you know what's really cool, though, HB, is that that probably since even we turned our bio in, we've just found out that we're going to have number four.
Oh, congratulations.
In a very unique way.
In a very unique way?
We have just, well, for the last year, we have been pursuing a little girl in China, and we just found out last Tuesday that officially we are matched officially with her, and we will get to bring her home in 4 to 6 months.
Yep.
Number four.
Annie is her name.
Have you had to make the trips over to China and do all those kind of things, too?
Not yet. So we've been over to China before, but we can't wait to go pick her up.
Well, you know, really, what we're trying to do on this edition of Pastor to Pastor is explore the challenges of balancing ministry with the family. And, you know, sometimes I say to pastors, if you're talking about balance, that may not be the best word, because I'm not sure there is a real balance. If you're talking about managing, then that's something else. And in my life with Beverly and our kids growing up, I didn't balance things very well, but I tried to manage them as best I could. And so if I could just kind of get you to kind of work with me on this, when I say to you, what are some of the proactive ways in which you've been able to get some really clear boundaries between the demands of ministry and your family life, what would that be? Now, let me set this up. You know, you guys have, you go on speaking events, you write books, you got three kids, you're at a big university, you've got all the family things going. So when I say demands of ministry, it probably is demands of ministry, right?
Absolutely.
Yes, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, God has blessed us with some wonderful opportunities. I think one of our friends, David Ferguson, who's a pastor, probably had a huge influence on us understanding this. And I think the biggest thing that we learned about balancing ministry and marriage was that, you know, for a lot of people, that really sets up a myth. And the myth is somehow that we, kind of like you were saying, HP, that you can balance somehow these two things. Almost like that marriage and family and ministry are two separate things, kind of like two plates that you're spinning around, you know, on the end of the stick. And anytime one starts to wobble, you attend to that, and then all of a sudden the other one will start to wobble, and then you put your efforts and energies into making sure that that's still spinning. And I think for us, what we've learned is that, you know, I think the reality is it's not about balancing. It's about realizing that marriage and family and our ministry are like two concentric circles. You know, they're not separate, and they're not isolated, they're not siloed. But there's something that, if they're more concentric, they overlap with you know, kind of God's right there in the middle.
Sure.
And what that's done for us, it's really helped set us up to go, you know, our family and ministry should never be separate. And I think the biggest thing that we've done is try to figure out, so how do I include my wife? How does she include me in our ministry? How do we include our kids? And, for example, years ago, I made a decision, you know what, when someone invites me in to speak, I'm going to bring one of my kids along.
Huh.
And we've had some amazing times. One time I was on an airplane taking my daughter, Maddie. She was probably three at the time.
Wow.
Or four. I mean, she was young. But, I mean, you know, I took her with me. In mid-flight, she stands up, faces the rest of the plane, and yells out, you know, screams, "Hi!" You know, scares all these people, and says, "Hi, my name's Maddie," and she pointed at me, and "This is my daddy," and I'm thinking, oh, here we go. And she yells out, and he spanks me.
Oh, man.
right in this crowded plane. Of course, everybody's looking at me like I'm some abuser, and what do you do in those moments? Yeah. But those are the times, though, that our kids now point to the times that they've come and traveled with Dad. And, I mean, I've taken them everywhere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's really come out of that notion that these aren't separate and distinct, that these are, they're concentric, they're so overlapping. And so we constantly look for ways to include our entire family. Wouldn't you say, Erin?
Absolutely. And I have just recently begun traveling with Greg over the last couple of years, and I can attest that there is nothing more enriching to our own relationship when we can stand up and teach others through, as an overflow of our marriage,
sure,
to share what we are learning in our own marriage. We never stand up and say that we have it perfect, because when we tell our stories and tell our experiences, it's very obvious that we are on the journey of growing a healthy marriage too. And there's nothing more enriching than sharing in that ministry together. And our kids understand that it's good for mom and dad to do this together.
And so if I can follow that reasoning along, then so that when you come home from a speaking trip or when you just come home from school or whatever, it's not a matter of turning off ministry and just being dad. But when you include them all along the way, you're always dad. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, because we include them in discussions about opportunities. We talk, they come to university here at John Brown University and come in at times and sit in my office. And, we really, as much as we can, we try to include them. So, yeah, so there's not like this time to where we have to turn on or one and turn off the other. And I think what's fun, too, like with our son, Garrison, who's now 8, I love to hear him say, hey, can you show me which office is going to be mine someday? And he's already talking about, I was asking him the other day, he either wants to be a football player, a Navy SEAL, or a marriage speaker. And they're all very similar.
Where do you get that last one from, I wonder?
Exactly.
Yeah, of course he thinks daddy should be playing professional football with
him. Well, because, when you look at me, it's very easy to assume that I am a professional football player. So.
Hey, well, one of the things, too, then, I always had a problem with workaholism, because I don't think that I included my kids as well as you all have suggested that I should have and that you do. But it would seem then that family would be one of the greatest defenses against workaholism because they keep reminding you of your responsibility and your place in their lives and the need they have for you. I had a hard time getting that together because the only model I had was a workaholic father. And so my thought to be successful in ministry was just to put all the work ahead of everything else. And our family suffered because of that. But what you're saying to me really makes sense. If you include the family, they're not going to let you be a workaholic.
Yeah, I think that when we think about workaholism or even, the boundaries like we've been talking about, another element, too, that's been so great is just the greatest commandment. We really try to model our ministry around the greatest commandment, saying that the top priority is to love God. If that's the greatest commandment, is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. That's first and foremost what's most important to us. But then you also then to love others as you love yourself. So another big component that we really try to do in terms of workaholism is we have to learn how to take good care of ourselves so that we're constantly being re-energized and recharged. And so, so what does that look like? But then I think the others part is that when you think about others, it really, my wife is the number one spot in terms of others.
Uh-huh.
My relationship with Aaron is more important than any other relationship. Again, God's number one, and then it's my wife, and then it's my kids, and then, it's extended family, and then, fellow believers, and then unbelievers. So, we actually try to prioritize. There's a sequence of priority in relationships.
The season of life that we're in right now with our kids, I have had to prioritize heavily on my children and cut out some extracurricular stuff for myself simply because we're in a season of having teenagers and, I'm in the car a lot, driving, and so my priority is with them, but my first priority is to Greg. So it's our marriage and then our kids. So sometimes when you are prioritizing these in that order that Greg was talking about with the others, that other things have to be set aside for this season. And it's just for a season, and we realize that.
And, I think the other thing that helps us as well is when we think about workaholism, we also think about the word busyness. And in many ways, those two are very related because, whether you're in ministry or not, in our culture, we are so busy. We lack margin. And what's so sad is that, there are so many verses in the Bible that talks about his desire for us is that we have abundance. And he wants, Ephesians 3, where it talks about that you may be filled to the measure of all the fullness of God, sure. That he came to give us life so that we may have it, abundantly, to the full. And yet the evil one wants to kill, steal, and destroy. And we know that he attacks us through busyness, whether it's investing in overly investing in work or just whatever. And one of our favorite things that we've learned in China is the character for busyness is made up of two things.
It's made up of two different symbols, and one is killing, and the second one is heart.
Wow.
So essentially, busyness means dead heart in Chinese. And that's exactly what busyness does. It ends up taking our heart out of the game, and when our heart's out of the game, what do we have left? Where is love? Where is the peace? I mean, so much is taken out if our heart's taken out, and that's what the evil one wants to do. I actually learned recently that oppressed means to wear out or wear down, and that's what happens when we are so busy without margin, like Greg was talking about, that we end up being very oppressed and very worn out, and our hearts are dead.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like busyness or workaholism. I mean, that makes us look important, but literally cripples our relationships. It, you know, it's like it feeds our egos, but it ultimately is going to starve our souls. It fills our calendars, but fractures our families. And there was this quote that says, "And busyness props our images, but shrinks our hearts." And I think that that's what we try to remember, is that the cost of all this, of being a workaholic or busyness, is that it shuts it down our hearts.
Well, let me ask you this question. We're talking primarily to pastors and their spouses and their families. Let me give you a hypothetical situation.
Yeah.
A pastor comes to you, and, you know, I think all of us try to be sensitive to our own children and how the ministry is affecting them and the influence. And the pastor says, you know, I see an aloofness in my children. They don't really want to go to church as much. They're kind of solitary. They're reclusive. They sit by themselves in the back of the church. In fact, the other day, one of my kids say, "Dad, if you weren't here, I wouldn't even go to this church because the people in it are not nice to you, and they're not nice to Mom, and I don't like them." What do you say to a teenager, a 13, 14, 15-year-old kid who's really down on the church because evidently the church has taken a really big bite out of their existence, so to speak?
Well, again, I think that's why what we've tried to do is approach this, that let's not separate church and family, and as much as we can try to cultivate our kids being involved. So, I mean, when there's still opportunity with this teenager to do that, but understanding that if that's how the teenager is feeling, I can tell you, HB, when I said almost those exact words to my dad when I was a teenager.
No kidding.
And I loved what my parents did. And I just came to it and said, you know what, I hate this church. I don't get anything out of it. All my friends are going to this other spot. and it was where my dad was at. And what I love that he did is that I think the language he would use now, because this is basically what he did, he said, you know what, if this feels like a loss for you, he would have said, then this is a loss for our family, and that's not okay. And what could we figure out that would feel good to you and to me? What could be a win-win for both of us? And the win for him was me being in church. The win for me was finding somewhere that I really felt more comfortable, and maybe we're around some friends that I knew or whatever. And what we did is we ended up finding another spot that my parents let me go to, and that lasted for a season, and it was great. And what it did is it made me feel important. It made me feel like that this wasn't just about making everybody at the church or making us look good so everybody thinks we're the perfect family. I mean, they gave me freedom to go find somewhere that I was able to invest, and I'm telling you what, I've never forgotten that. And that's when you approach your family is this, you know what, if one of us is losing, then the whole family loses, and that's not okay. So let's figure out a solution that you feel good about and I feel good about. Why can't we do that? And that's what they did for me, and it kept me from, I think, turning my back on church. So that's what at least we'd encourage a pastor to do.
You know, and I've heard you all teach on this whole concept of loss before, and it really does make sense, but it takes honesty, doesn't it? I mean, the child has to admit that this might be a loss in his life. And as a parent, I can't just say, oh, no, it's not, or that's not true. I've got to agree when we've got to agree what loss is. Is that right?
Well, and we have really nurtured that with our kids. When they come to us with their feelings and their emotion, we really try to validate what they're feeling. We don't have to agree with it. We don't have to feel the same way, but simply just saying, wow, I'm really hearing that you feel that this is not a good situation for you. You feel unimportant. You feel criticized, and just validating that. And it's building that relationship that is safe, that they feel like they're going to be heard, they're going to be validated, that mom and dad are on our team. That we may not always agree, and we may, and there's situations where there's consequences, and but ultimately that they feel like they can come and be heard.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's really, we're trying to make our home feel like the safest place on earth. And we want them to feel safe. I love that. In the name of the Lord is a strong tower, and those who run to it, and they feel safe. And that's what we want our kids to feel, and that's why helping them to feel safe means that they know that their feelings matter to us,
yeah.
That we're not going to run over them, that their ideas and their opinions and their beliefs and their questions are important to us. And therefore, we're going to take the time to care and to listen, to understand. We don't do this perfectly. I mean, geez, just last night, you know, my middle daughter, Maddie, was getting ready for bed. She wasn't moving fast enough, and man, I barked at her and shut her down. She went into her room crying, and then I was yelling, "You're crying too loud. I can't concentrate. You know, be more quiet. Shut your door." I mean, pathetic. And yet, I ultimately went in there and said, "You know what, man, I was wrong. Tell me, what was that like for you?" And it was hard to hear how I made her feel and what her experience was like. But, you know, I could own that and take responsibility. So, I mean, I have to deal with this stuff all the time.
Those of us who have grown up in ministry families, you know, I'm sure we sit down and we talk about the horror stories of being in the fishbowl where everybody's looking in and they're privy to the, you know, our dad uses his illustrations just like you did with Maddie and all those kind of things.
Exactly. And then they make up ones that never happen.
Yeah, then they make them
exactly.
up.
Exactly.
And you mentioned a while ago a safe place. And I would think that both you, Greg and Aaron, would agree that that safe place has got to be the home, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, we have a lot of fun in our house, even laughing later on, "Hey, do you remember last Sunday night, Dad, how you lost it with me and this is what happened?" And we nurture that fun environment. And so really, I think our kids really ultimately enjoy hearing these stories. They tell stories, and it does breed just that shared sense of safety within the family.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that my dad and mom and I have had this conversation, that they did so much, so perfect for me growing up. But I tell you, there was one thing that I told them that I wish could have been different, and it was that when we were out in public, my dad constantly would remind us that people are looking at you, they're watching you, you better be on your best behavior. Not in a way to try to control us so much as just he wanted to say, you know, people are going to look at you and you need to be aware of that. It really put a lot of pressure on myself and my siblings, and we felt like we couldn't be authentic and we couldn't be real. And Aaron and I have talked a lot about that, to where we've never said that to our kids. And we don't want them to have that pressure of knowing that people are looking, because it's reality. They're going to look. You know, we want them to be authentic. There are times it's so painful when my kids are arguing and they're bickering and they're, you know, Garrison will go up and smack his sister, you know, punch her on the arm or something.
Yeah. Or having our one daughter who cried every single day going into kindergarten for almost the entire year.
Yes.
And our entire town would see it and they would say, "Wow, today was really a good one."
Yeah. And so, you know, and so what we've tried to do with our kids is just, you know, we let them be who they are, and we, you know, they're responsible for how they treat each other. But we've never tried to set up, hey, we're sort of in this fishbowl. And yet the other thing that we do, too, is that we surround ourselves with people that we can really trust.
Good point.
And so we've got some great friends that feel very safe, that we know they're not going to be out sharing what we talk about and you know, and gossiping about us. And that's who we can really let our hair down with. And, of course, my hair's short anyway. But, you know, we can really loosen up with them and just have fun. And so I think that's important, that in ministry that we've got people who are safe, who that we can just be real and authentic with. And we try to, you know, help our kids to know that, you know, you're going to make mistakes. But we don't want that added pressure of, oh, yeah, but everybody's watching you. So at least that's kind of how we've tried to do things.
Our guests on this edition, Greg and Aaron Smalley, thanks for the insight. Thanks for the advice. I think, you know, the word loss comes to me. Safe place comes to me. Letting your children be who they are and letting them develop naturally. And you all have done such a wonderful thing through your conferences and your books and your tapes and SmalleyMarriage.com and all these kind of things. And thank you for allowing us the time just to kind of look in on your family and laugh a little bit.
Well, we are so appreciative. We're humbled to be on with you. You've done such an amazing service for pastors, and we're just excited to share whatever has helped us with pastors. So thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
You're listening to Pastor with Reverend H.B. London, Jr. I'm Chris Fabry, and it's been our privilege to have Dr. Greg Smalley and his wife, Erin, join us on the program. If you want to know more about the Smalleys, we encourage you to visit that website. Again, it's SmalleyMarriage.com. That's S-M-A-L-L-E-Y, marriage.com. H.B., I liked what Greg and Erin shared about including their kids as much as possible in their ministry, which I'm sure helps minimize the sense of tug of war between family and ministry expectations.
You know, I like that too, Chris. A lot of pastoral families will tell you they spend a lot of time at the church and whenever there's a family activity, like a church picnic or potluck or whatever. But I also encourage families to get away whenever they can to just be together doing something they enjoy apart from the church. You know, a time and a place where they can just be normal family like everybody else. But the thing that I found as I've talked to a lot of pastors along the way, Chris, is that even if it does deal with church, if the members of the family can take ownership in what's going on at the church, if they can show an interest in what their mom and dad are doing, if they can somehow buy into the fact that this is who their moms and dads are and they've been called to do this, there's not that resentment or anger or kind of a I hate the church mentality that a lot of pastors' kids develop.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we have a lot more encouragement for pastoral families coming up. Our host, Reverend H.B. London Jr., convened a special panel of couples to describe how they've worked out the juggling act of family versus ministry. That's coming up in our second segment of Pastor to Pastor.
Well, what about next Tuesday then? We can all go over to the mall for a quick bite and then sit for a family photo.
No, that's not going to work. There's a board finance meeting that afternoon. Could run late. I probably won't be home for dinner.
And Tuesday morning?
No, I'll be prepping for the meeting. Church budgets are complicated. Sorry.
And Wednesday's out
because of the youth conference. Which goes on through the end of the week, and then we're back to Sunday again. Uh-oh. I know that sound. What is it?
You do remember that you have a family to take care of, right, Pastor?
Well, it tells me that that couple is having a little trouble balancing family time with everything else that's going on at the church. We are exploring this topic on this edition of Pastor to Pastor. I'm Chris Fabry. Our host, as always, is Reverend H.B. London, Jr.
You know, Chris, you know, my kids are grown now, and they've got my grandkids are in college, at least three of the four are. And as I look back over those years of raising them up and getting them going and out on their own, you know, I'll admit that I didn't always do as good a job as I should of making my family a priority. I think Beverly really was the key to the success that our family enjoys right now. But man, you've got nine kids and you work as a writer and you're a radio talk show host, and I mean, I don't know how you get people from one point to the next, and you're married and you've got a wife and you've got all these stuff going and you live in the desert and all this. How do you make it work?
I have three clones of myself. It's a wonderful thing. No, I appreciate the question, HB, because I think we've talked about this with when Andrea was with us. Some great advice that Jerry Jenkins gave me years ago. He had three sons, and he said he would not do a writing project when he got home at night until the kids were tucked in bed. And he said sometimes we tucked them in right after the dinner, but he said, you know, we'd have that family time. It's got to be intentional. And one of the things with some of the health struggles that we've dealt with in our family, and one of my sons has type 1 diabetes, so we were told early on, when this happens in a family, usually what happens is one person becomes the go-to person. You know, it's always this person that you're calling saying, how much do I give?
Yeah.
And we've tried really hard with that as the example to have me come along and say, look, you take a day off now. You go and you just, you know, do whatever you need to do. And I'm going to be here and I'll take charge. And when you come back, the kitchen's going to be clean and this kind of thing. And all some of that weight that's on her shoulders a lot with all the things that she does around the house is taken off, at least for a period of time. And she knows, oh, I'm going to have this day or that day or this evening. And when you work together like that, then it makes some of the rest of the time and the, you know, getting the family stuff done a little bit easier because you know you're going to get a break at some point.
You know, the thing that I sense, and I still don't know how you, I mean, you made a good explanation, but I still don't know how you do it. But the thing that I sense in ministry is that you really need to be intentional.
Yeah.
If you don't set out to make it work, then it probably will not work. And I'm excited about our next panel of guests. You know, we were at a pastor's conference that Focus on the Family sponsored. We were in the beautiful desert community of La Quinta, California. It's out near Palm Springs. And we were at this beautiful resort and palm trees and flowers and gentle breezes and wonderful fellowship. And I had a chance to get with these three couples who really work in the trenches. They've all got kids. They've all got a story. But it was just interesting to see how they made things work. It didn't always work out the first time, but usually they were able to get it together. And Chris, you're going to introduce them.
Well, the panel included Pastor Michael Henderson and his wife Angela. They serve at Shiloh Church of God in Christ in Oceanside, California. Pastor Bob Huseman and his wife Lisa. He's senior pastor at Emmanuel Christian Reformed Church in Hudsonville, Michigan. And our third couple, Reverend Wade Brown and his wife Deb. Reverend Brown is a former pastor who now serves on the pastoral ministries team here at Focus on the Family.
This is a little different segment on our Pastor to Pastor series because I'm sitting in a big old room out here in Palm Springs, California, La Quinta to be exact, where we're involved in a clergy couples conference. We do these from time to time around the country, and Focus on the Family joins with the pastors and their spouses to laugh a lot and enjoy one another's company and to eat good food and just to be inspired as best we can through messages and through song and through the interaction that we have with one another. And I'm joined at the table by Wade and Deb Brown, who are members of our staff, our pastoral staff at Focus on the Family, by Mike and Angela Henderson from Oceanside, California, and from Bob and Lisa Heisman from Hudsonville, Michigan. And so we're kind of going from one end of the country to the other. And we're going to be talking about juggling and balancing family and ministry, which seems to be one of the toughest challenges that any of us will ever have. And as I look back in my life, that sure was tough for me and Beverly. So you may hear some noise from outside or whatever. If you do, just ignore it, because we're in here and we're just talking together. Bob and Lisa, would you just briefly tell us where you serve and what you're doing there and how long you've been in Hudsonville, Michigan?
We have been in Hudsonville, Michigan almost 14 years. We're serving a church that's about 60 years old. And I'm the only ordained staff at the church. And we have a family of four boys and three girls at home. And so we find a good challenge in trying to keep balance in ministry.
Okay, so you got seven kids at home.
Seven kids at home.
All right, okay, thanks. We'll talk about that more. And Mike and Angela, you live in the beautiful Oceanside, California.
Yes, yes. We're serving at a small congregation, Shiloh Church of God in Christ. Uh-huh. And we've been there for about 11 years now.
Yeah. Your leader, Charles Blake, and I are good friends, and we've been together a lot of different times. How many children do you have?
We have three boys, three sons.
Yeah, and they're all over the place in ages, or are they stair-stepped?
Well, they're stair-steps. They are 17, 18, and 19.
Oh, man, so you have a very active household, I'm
definitely
sure. Yeah. And Wade and Deb Brown have been with us on staff here at Focus on the Family for about 10 months, and I know for a fact they've got an 18-year-old daughter and a 13-year-old son, but they've had a variety of pastorates and ministry assignments through the years. Wade, as you look back on all those, what was the one that probably tested you the most, if I might say that?
Yes, really a church that I grew up in spiritually in Colorado Springs, and a church that where the senior pastor really in so many ways age helped me to understand God's call on my life for vocational ministry. And that was about, served in that church from 85 to 95 as just a lay leader, Deb and I, and they sent us out to seminary, supported us in church planning, brought me back to be their associate pastor. And I actually was there as a pastor, as the associate pastor from 99 to 2001 in Colorado Springs.
Yeah. And that's really how you came to know Focus on the Family, wasn't it?
I sure did.
Or at least the ministry to pastors.
Sure did, absolutely. Observed really you from a distance and admired your ministry and the ministry of the team. And remember 8 years ago when you folks put that family, pastor and family retreat on the campus there at Focus. And just ministered us deeply.
Yeah, I run into so many people around the country, you'd think we had thousands there, but
really
it was 250 couples is what it was. Now, the women haven't said much, so Angela, I just want to start with you. Oceanside, California, three teenage boys. I know that as African Americans, so often the husband and the wife serve together, sometimes as co-pastors. It's really a partnership. If you had to identify the area of ministry that takes up more of your time as a mom and a wife and a churchwoman more than any other thing, what would you say that would be?
Well, I serve in a lot of different areas. I do administration, I do praise and worship. So I think the area that takes up most of my time probably would be the area of praise and worship, just preparing, doing a lot of preparing for that, and just trying to balance family with all the demands of being a praise and worship leader. I think that would be the greatest thing.
Now, your kids are just about grown.
Yes.
But does that still take you out of the house a lot at night? I mean, to do rehearsals and that kind of thing?
It does. It does. And then I have a son that isn't driving yet. He's 18, but he isn't driving yet. So that takes me out a lot to have to drive him around and then juggle things within the ministry. Yeah. So, yes, definitely.
Yeah, Deb, you serve on the staff of a large church in Colorado Springs in a mission area. But with both of you, you know, you and Wade both being in ministry, how do you balance all of that? How do you keep everything straight?
H, I've really tried to make my weekends available to be there for the kids when Wade's had to be out. On staff at Focus now, he travels more, and so I need to be more available and less available for work, knowing that my priority is my kids, not my work. Even though it's a calling in life, my children are a higher priority than what I do. So that's my balance, but at the same time, there's times when I need to be on and be working, and Wade has to play a support role for the kids. For me, since I need to be at a missions conference, or I travel out of town on mission trips for a week at a time, and he has to be on when I'm off.
And I know your kids are active in sports and that kind of thing, so that adds to the schedule, doesn't it?
It sure does. You do feel like a taxi.
Yeah. Now, Lisa, I can't imagine having six kids in a house all at the same time, and I know that that takes a lot of balancing to do ministry and to be a helpmate to Bob and to take care of all the kids. How do you do all that?
I think when we were younger in ministry, and we just had, like say when we came to this church, we just had two little girls at the time, I tried to do more. I tried to be that woman that could be on this committee and that committee and part of this ministry and just do as much as I could. And as our family grew, and particularly with the birth of our fifth child who was born disabled, I realized that I needed to, for a season of my life, sacrifice some of those commitments for the health of my family and for the health of our marriage. So I consciously allowed myself to pull out of things that I felt like I needed to be part of or even wanted to be part of and said, for this point, for this health of our kids and ourselves, I needed to pull back a little bit and only do the very least right now and allow people to let me do that. So I think I've been in a season. Our fifth child is now 8, and we've added 2 more since then. So I still find myself in that season, but as the older kids get older, I find myself integrating myself back into ministries here and there, even if it's in small amounts, to contribute where I can, but allow myself the freedom to say this isn't the season for me, and that time will come again.
Now, I know that pastors' wives always deal with the unrealistic expectations that people drop on. Have people in your church been pretty understanding about the fact that you can only do so much? And
I think they have, and I think part of my goal is to allow them to see myself, but Bob too, as just real people. And I think when we were young in ministry, I felt like there was that need to show people, oh, I could do it all. I could be the strong person and had it all together. And I realize when they see me as real and fallible and I don't have it all together, then they see me as maybe somebody that they can relate to, instead of putting on that facade that, you know, I have it all together. And sometimes just making it to church on Sunday morning with everybody dressed and their hair combed is a feat in itself.
Wait, you know, in your different assignments, and as your kids have grown up, you know, you've got, you know, 5 years between the two kids and that kind of thing. And
yes.
So, you know, Kelsey, wasn't raised as a pastor's kid or in those early years, was she?
You know, I was in seminary during those early years, and Benjamin was born our first semester of seminary, and so that presented a unique challenge in and of itself, and I think my first class at seminary was church history, started early, and just wondered what God was doing in all that timing with all that. Didn't do very well in the class, but I'm not sure I did well as a parent or even a husband during that time. It was just a very stressful time, I remember that being, and you know, I was one of those late bloomers in ministry, if you will. So I was 35 when I started seminary, but I felt much younger than that, spiritually speaking, I think, as well.
Mike, you know, you got those 3 teenage guys, and with them growing up, I can just imagine, as close as they are, that I don't know about Little League or football or whatever or sports, but I'm sure that there were times where you just had to back away from the church a little bit so that you could be the father that you needed to be. How did you manage that?
Well, our boys were, in their younger years, very, very involved in athletics. Yeah. All 3 of them played Pop Warner football. And surprisingly enough, I was able to make it to many of their practices. I even had one opportunity to serve as the team chaplain.
Oh, really?
And so that was real great, but it gave me an opportunity to really get involved with what they were doing, and also to connect even with, you know, what was going on in, you know, the lives of the other kids and even the families, their parents as well. Yeah. So it was a great experience.
Yeah, you know, I never had the luxury of my dad involving himself in anything I did, and so when I hear you all talk about that, you know, I get that. You know, that I almost missed that with my kids. I was so busy that, you know, you usually model what you've been taught. Mm. And as a result of that, when my kids were very little, I wasn't as good as I should have been. But I think we've made it up since then. The question that I have, and I want to go couple by couple if we can, so I want to start with Mike and Angela here, is there a difference in raising pastors' kids that you can see from just the secular world and the neighbors you have next door or whatever? Do you see a really distinct difference in raising a pastor's kid as opposed to just an ordinary child?
I think the main difference for us has been that we not only just wanted to have good children, but we really wanted to have kids that had a heart for God. Yeah. And our boys were, you know, homeschooled. We took the path of Angela here staying home with them, and she poured herself into those boys, teaching them scripture and teaching them the ways of God. And I think for us that has really made a world of difference. We're seeing it now as they're getting older. The fruit of that is coming out, and we're just so thankful to God that He enabled us to to be able to invest spiritually so in their lives. But I would say that probably is about the main difference.
Angela, when you think back to that time, were there many other children in the neighborhood who were homeschooled?
Actually, that was a very lonely time period for me because there were not. I was an African-American mom, yeah. And the neighborhood was predominantly Caucasian and a few African-Americans, but they were working moms. So I could remember that being a very lonely time, but I just really felt that God had called me to stay at home and to really pour into their lives. And I'm just so grateful that I had older a seasoned couple who would encourage me to take the route that I felt that the Lord was leading me because it was such a struggle. It was like I was torn because although I felt God calling me to stay home, I realized that the culture was so different I felt like I was opposing the culture, especially being African American and not having that support system. So, yeah.
What? You know, Bob and Lisa from Hudsonville, Michigan, living right next door to the church, seven kids. Are the expectations that you have for your children or people have for your children any different? I mean, just right next door to the church. I mean, they can hear them screaming or whatever.
Or me screaming.
Have you had to adjust the way you raise those kids simply because you do live next door to the church?
There are probably some moments in their lives where we tell them that we have different expectations for them because they are the pastor's kids, but those would be the exception to the rule. I think most of the time we raise them the way that we would even if they weren't pastor's kids. You know, we still try to instill good values into them.
Yeah.
I think that's often seen as a negative aspect in their lives, but being the pastor's kids also gives them some opportunities that other kids don't have.
Yeah.
They all seem, you know, very comfortable participating in things where they're not intimidated by things of the church because it's familiar to them, mm-hmm. part of their life.
I was going to ask you, Lisa, were they in the Christmas play and the Easter play and all that kind of thing?
You know, I think they sometimes purposely avoid putting our kids in places of honor like that, just so that there isn't that feeling like they're getting special privileges, yeah. and we're actually really good with
that's
that.
That's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would have to say I was raised the daughter of a minister, yeah. who was a military chaplain, and really raised my whole life being mocked and ridiculed for being a pastor's child, yeah. or a minister's child, and proud of him, but not loving the mockery,
yeah,
and the
situation.
Teasing in a very secular environment. And I worried about that for my kids. And I have to say, I really think they don't have that stigma, not at church, really, and not at school. And for that, we consider it a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
I think, for the most part, people consider them normal,
yeah.
kids.
Just average kids. Mm-hmm. You know, Wade and Deb, I know that the last assignment you had before you came to Focus on the Family was in a mega church, and so it probably was easy for your kids to get lost in
Absolutely.
All that, wasn't it?
Yeah, it sure was. But, you know, I would agree with what Bob just said. You know, I think it's the external pressure that other people mm-hmm. tend to put on your kids as PKs. And, you know, I would like to think that we would have raised our kids the same way as well. And I know Deb, you know, in the many weekends and night meetings that I've had over the years, especially in the life of the local church, Deb mm-hmm. has done an amazing job with Kelsey and Benjamin. And, you know, just keeping them in God's word. And so, I mean, you really have. I mean, she's done a phenomenal job at that. And we, too, are seeing the fruit of that now in their lives. So it's good
to
see.
So in a big church like that, did you insist that your kids were part of everything? Or just because you were on staff?
Absolutely.
Did that add pressure to their
Absolutely
lives?
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
You know, and I want Deb to speak into some of that, too. They found their niche in the life of the church. They really did. And what worked for them. And, you know, we've tried to be careful over the years, HB, with not wanting our children to dislike the church or have mm-hmm. ill feelings towards
yes.
the church.
Yeah.
And, you know, mm-hmm. for them to go out into life having those kind of thoughts, bitterness towards the church, mm-hmm. I think would just break our hearts.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not there, and we're just grateful
yes.
Because of that. But Deb probably has some insight into that as well.
I think our desire has been to not raise them as PKs necessarily, to raise them as normal kids. And even though they may carry a title, like we carry titles in life, mm-hmm. we hope that others don't see them as that title, but they see them as Kelsey and see them as Benjamin. And somewhere down the road, they may find out that dad is a pastor or mom's on staff at a church. But their friends don't know that first. And even in a mega church especially, others don't know that. Yeah. Even being on staff at a church, others don't even know that I'm on staff when I meet them at the church necessarily, and it may be later. Yeah. When Wade was one of the pastors at the church, he would teach a lot, and we wouldn't necessarily be together always at church. It would be me with the kids or me by myself. And there would be times when I would be talking with someone, and I never introduced myself as Wade's wife. Right. It was Deb, and I'm on staff in missions or whatever. And then later, actually, it was one time I was on a mission trip. I had trained a team for 8 weeks. Actually, I think it was 4 months. And then we went on this mission trip together, and on the bus in Peru, we're driving down, and they say, "You're Wade Brown's wife?" And I'm going, "Yes, that's... I never made that connection," and that's an okay thing for me. Yeah. I don't want to necessarily be connected and be called Wade Brown's wife. I don't need the status. My kids don't need that status.
But in a mega church, you can get away with that.
Yes.
Right. As the other two couples, as I listen to it wouldn't be quite that easy for you, would it?
No.
I mean, everybody knows who you are, and they know where you live, and they know
that's
what
exactly
your kids are
right.
doing, and all that kind of thing. The one question that I think a lot of our pastors listening would be interested in, you know, we live in a fishbowl, and so, you know, we're all floating around, and people are looking in and seeing all this stuff is going. How do you pull the shades on that fishbowl and kind of disappear so that people don't know everything that's going on or what you're doing? How do you all handle that, Mike?
Well, every so often, we're finding that it's very important for us to just get away.
Yeah.
Sort of like what we did this week.
Yeah.
And I kind of over the years have developed a habit of when we are getting away, I only tell those who, you know, it's absolutely necessary for them to know. And we just kind of slip off into the background. Nobody's even aware. We might get a few phone calls, but we'll, you know, let the voicemail pick it up and forward it to whoever can handle that or should handle that while we're away. But we're just finding the importance of being able to take that time for ourselves, change the environment, change the scenery, and that goes a long way in terms of helping us to come back and be refreshed and ready to deal with all the things we have to deal with.
Bob, with 7 kids, the fishbowl escape becomes a little more difficult, I would think. And because you might forget a kid or something.
Right? Been known to happen.
And have to go back home. How do you all get away? I mean, how do you pull the shades and shut the door and say, you know, no entrance or whatever? I mean, how do you do that?
What comes to mind is 2 things. One, getting out of town to places where we know we're not going to run into, you know, our friends at church. So going on vacations or on trips to places where we know we'll be anonymous. Yeah. We find that's a good thing. And also having some friendships, other families that aren't part of our congregation, where our kids can be there and they can just be their friends and not be the pastor's kids, and we're not the pastor to our friends. That's just a job for me, like they have a job. Mm-hmm. So there's not those church connections. That's been good for us to have those kind of friendships.
Yeah. You know, Wade and Deb, I know that I know you better than the other couples, but you guys are runners and you like outside exercise and a lot of that kind of thing. I'm sure that that's an escape for you, isn't it? Just to be able to get out and go run or do whatever. Deb, right?
It definitely is. I miss it right now. I'm in, with an injury, and I miss getting out and running as much. But it definitely gives you, in a sense, almost solve some of the world's problems, yeah. ministry problems or whatever, as you're out running. I have found that listening to my iPod, Christian music, has really, it encourages me and inspires me as I'm running. Some people like heavier music, but yeah. even praise and worship helps me a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've heard other people say the same, that if you can just isolate and yes. just kind of block out the rest of the yeah. world, that you can yeah. solve a lot of those problems.
Yeah, and H, I think one of the things that's helped with us is our kids have kept us incredibly active. And
yes.
I mean, whether it's, you know, a sporting event in town locally or in a different state, and that's taken place many times over the years, we really try to make that our family getaway time. And so it saves us some money in the process. We are with the kids, and we love watching them do their thing anyway, whether it's the running thing or the biking or swimming or whatever. Yeah. But that's been a lot of our family vacation yes. time over the years, and a great getaway for us yeah. as a family.
Yeah, we're talking to literally thousands of pastors right now, and a lot of pastors' wives listen before their husbands listen, and. If you could say to them, and I'm going to start with Bob and Lisa, but if you could look out into this thousands of people and say, if you really want to find a healthy balance between ministry and family, then you've got to make sure of blank, blank, blank. Hmm. If you really want to find a balance between family and ministry, then you've got to make sure of blank, blank, blank. What would you say?
My first thought is you've got to make sure that whenever it's possible, you're in charge of your schedule. For us, it's been a lifesaver to plan our schedule and plan far ahead whenever possible, the nights that I'm away and the nights that I'm home, so that the family system can plan on that, and then whenever possible I don't stray from that.
Yeah.
So if they know Dad's going to be home on Monday and Tuesday, you can plan that, and unless it's an emergency, that doesn't change. And I think having that as a constant, this is when Dad's gone, this is when Dad's home, that has helped us a lot.
Yeah.
And I try to prioritize that as much as possible.
Well, that's just the schedule. People knowing in advance what you're going to do and what would be required, and
mm-hmm.
when you can eat dinner together and when you can't, and all those kind of things. You all live in a military town, don't you, Oceanside?
Yes.
So you probably have people dropping by at all hours of the night and day, or people needing something from time to time.
Definitely.
Yeah, so if you were saying to folks around, you know, this is how we've tried to balance family and ministry, what would you all say?
I think for us, the whole idea and concept of prioritizing your life is important. God first, family second, the church comes third.
Yeah.
And we've tried to live by that. We feel that it's very important to stay focused in those areas and to keep first things first, the main thing, the main thing.
Yeah.
If you can stick to that, it'll make a world of difference.
And you do it without making excuses, right?
Without making excuses.
Yeah.
Sometimes you fall off the bandwagon.
Yeah. Yeah.
And another thing I might add is the importance of having accountability relationships.
Yeah.
Folks in your life that
yeah.
ask you, hey, how you doing in this area?
Angela, do you have to say to Mike ever, you're running too fast, you're running too hard, we're missing you at home?
Yeah, I do. I have to tell him to slow down a bit at times. And I thank God for him, because he does. He'll make that adjustment, and if he needs to change his schedule or do things a little bit differently just to accommodate the family, he's usually pretty good about doing that.
Yeah. Lisa, with seven kids, do you ever just wake up some morning and say, I don't know if I can do this today?
More often than I'd like to admit, sometimes. Some days you feel invincible, and other days you think, what am I doing? You know.
And what do you do on those days when you're saying, what am I doing? I mean,
I think I just, the family makes you keep going.
Yeah,
you say, you know, this is what I'm doing.
You just have to do it.
We'll get through this.
Yeah.
And I think in response to your question about balance, I think I would reiterate what I said earlier in that it's okay to say we have seasons of life where you can give more than other seasons and to give yourself the freedom, like we've had to do in our life, to say this is maybe not the time when I can contribute even in areas I feel called to or want to, but right now the kids need me there. And this is where my calling is, my first calling. And that time will come again.
Yeah, it will. And God will reward you for what you're doing now. Just last with Deb, you know, these other ladies are stay-at-home moms and homeschooling and doing different things. And you've chosen, a career path in ministry. And so when you guys get home at night, do you just always talk ministry? Is Wade always saying this happened today, or are you always saying I had this meeting, or that lousy senior pastor, all that kind of stuff? How do you separate all that?
Well, when we get home at night, I have two hungry kids and a hungry husband, so the first thing I do is get dinner going. There's no talking at first. And then after dinner, if we have time or don't have an event going on, then Wade and I will sometimes sit down in the kitchen as things are getting cleaned up and we'll have some time to talk. But no, we found that we can't constantly talk ministry. Our kids aren't interested in ministry all the time. I mean, they don't live it. They're actually interested in our attention. They want to tell us about their days. It's really neat to see our daughter at the table. We do it high-lows is what we call it. And she will usually start it. She'll say, okay, high-lows for the day. So each of us have to go around the table. What was your high and what was your low? And I know for us sometimes we don't even think about doing the high-lows, but she's really held us accountable to doing it. And it's been a blessing for us to share that because we have to actually stop and think about what was our high and what was our low. And most of us don't usually do that on a daily basis, to really stop and look back on the day and reflect on that.
But that's good wisdom because you can celebrate with each other's highs and maybe you can help where there's lows.
That's exactly right.
Wade, you came out of a church ministry into a para-church ministry, and I did the same thing, and there's a whole different kind of pressure now that is easier for me than it was as a pastor.
Interesting.
I never was able to just forget who I was and what I was.
Right.
And
now
in a para-church world, you know, I don't have every Sunday, and I don't have to go to church on Wednesday night. And,
that's right. Yeah.
And,
that
I don't
has
have
been
to act like I want to, you know.
That's right.
I know just from our talking, that's been different for you too.
Oh my
right?
goodness, you know it really has, H, and it's been fun to process that with you. It's been refreshing. This is a different season for us, and you know we hope it goes on forever. But God knows, He's the one who orchestrates and knows the plans He has for us, but. You know, it has been different not to face that relentless return of Sunday or the Sabbath, so to speak. And even though I wasn't doing the teaching every weekend, there were responsibilities and just being there at times for four services, not just one service. And but, you know, week after week after week, and you so look forward to your weekend off, and it didn't seem to come soon enough. But and then, of course, the meetings associated with that. And in many respects, I feel... at first, there was a sense of guilt, honestly, and I got over that quickly. And, again, just processing with H on that, and you did it for over 30 years, so I can't imagine you that kind of segue that you made. But
the greatest freedom I was not having Sunday nights.
Oh, I bet.
Not having to come back with a Sunday night sermon.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
My first Sunday, I just did cartwheels. Yippees all over the place. Thanks. Our guest on this section or this edition of Pass It to Pastor has been Wade and Deb Brown from Colorado Springs and Focus on the Family. Mike and Angela Henderson from Oceanside, California, and Bob and Lisa Heisman from Hudsonville, Michigan. Thank you all very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Our thanks to this special panel of pastoral couples for joining us on Pastor to Pastor with Reverend H.B. London, Jr. I'm Chris Fabry. H.B., I know as we conclude this edition on balancing family and ministry, you have some final thoughts you'd like to share.
Well, thanks, Chris. You know, we've been doing this so many years now, 15 or 16 years, that I think that we've just about told every story that we have. And but as I think back in those early days, I've often said on Pastor to Pastor editions that I remember one time an older pastor, bless his heart, I know it was a generational thing, but in a sense he kind of patted me on the head and he said, Brother London, you just go out and build the church and God will take care of your family. And the upshot of that was that, you know, not having a dad who was a very good father and not having a dad who was a good manager of family and not having a dad who expressed love and affection to me very much, I just thought that that would be my mandate, to go build the church and God would take care of my family. Well, the upshot would be of that, you know, he didn't necessarily take care of my family. I think he showed grace and mercy. But here I was, a young pastor, 23, 24. The church was growing and people were saying what a wonderful pastor I was, and you know, that the sky was the limit for my career and all those kind of things. But in a sense, you know, I was being successful in ministry but a phony at home, until one day Beverly just said to me, and she left this in a note, she said, it's obvious that you have misplaced your priorities and we're not going to have any ministry at all until you come to a place where you put us in the proper priority. And, you know, we argue about priority all the time. Is it God, family, church, church, God, family, whatever that sequence is? But the truth is, it's not all of them all the time in the same place. That there are going to be a lot of times when God is number one without a question, and the family is second and the church is third. But there are going to be other times when in the managing and balancing process, you know, you've got to make God number one, but sometimes the work of the church almost crowds him out of that position. And so you find yourself doing the work of the church, but alienating the one who called you to do the work of the church. And that's a serious thing. But the family many times has got to understand that sometimes in ministry, ministry will come before family. I know we hate to say that, and that would be an offense to say to our spouse or to our children, but honest, people die at inconvenient times. You have three or four presentations to make, and you haven't had time to get all those messages together. The board is meeting on a building situation, and it just so happens that the only time you can get them together is the first half of the basketball game that your child is playing in. Or some weeks you find yourself out of the house four or five nights and you hate doing it, but you don't have any choice. And see, this is where you sit down and you look at one another and you help each other understand how you're feeling and why you're feeling that way. Because so often, Chris, honest, pastor spouses, many times they feel like they're second-class church members, that you give more attention to people that you hardly know than you do to the people who live under your roof. And the truth of it is, sometimes we do that, and we hate it, but we do. But then there are those other times when you can take an afternoon off, or when you can schedule yourself in such a way that you can spend really quality time with your family, where most men or women who had a regular job couldn't do that. And you make the most of those situations. And so I'll say it over and over again, that if you're looking for balance in your ministry, you'll probably never find it. But if in an intentional way you and your spouse agree on how you're going to manage your family, your relationship, your schedule, and your ministry, you'll come to a pretty happy medium somewhere along the way. It won't always be great, but it'll be livable. And then there will be those wonderful times when you can just say, wow, isn't God good to give us this wonderful, wonderful time together? Aren't we fortunate to be doing what we're doing? And I just think we've got to go into this thing of managing our family and balancing our schedules with a sense of optimism, knowing that we're not going to get it right all the time. But if we try, we're going to get it right most of the time.
Thanks for sharing that with us, HB, and it really points out how important this team is of a pastor and the family. If you want to learn more about pastoral ministries here at Focus on the Family, we recommend you visit our website. It's parsonage.org. You'll find many resources designed specifically for your family and ministry at the site, including our online forums, which allow you to interact with other pastors who know exactly what you are going through. You can also find other pastor-to-pastor topics that we've addressed, like mentoring men, healthy boundaries, and nagging doubts. And if you or a family member would like to talk with one of our pastoral counselors, we have a toll-free, confidential pastoral care line available. Simply call 1-877-233-4455. Reverend H.B. London and I look forward to sharing with you again on another edition of Pastor to Pastor, but in the meantime, may God richly bless you, your family, and your ministry.